Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn-Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, August the 8th, 2017, and this is our 356 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue. And occasionally, we hear from Shaharon using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And before we start, I want to thank James from North Wales, Pennsylvania, for sending us $20 to Historicity Productions. We appreciate you, James, because everyone keeps listening, and it's interesting to see how many people listen when I look at the site statistics. So, hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
Hello.
Yep. How do you hear me?
Well, loud and clear, just like you're right here.
Oh, okay.
Unlike the old days that you and I remember.
Oh, with the old telephone line that were scratchy and can you hear me now?
I don't even think I could make a call to Maui because you'd have to hook up all those operators, call another operator all the way across the country. And then by then, hello? In the old days, you probably could barely get across the country.
Well, yeah, they kind of had different ways. I know all about the old days, but yeah, you definitely could tell you were on a long distance call.
Oh yes, long distance.
And as soon as digital came out, of course, that went away because everything is reconstructed on one and is deconstructed on the sending in and receiving side, reconstructs the audio according to the digital information. That's why you couldn't tell with all the additional various kinds of noise. They had a name for every kind of noise you could think of.
That's pretty amazing that it can deconstruct and then reconstruct it at the other end, and it still has. I can still tell it to you.
Yeah, they call that, encoding.
Encoding.
Yeah, it was invented. Pulse code modulation was invented time of Morse code. So there was no way that the inventor, he only, put the patent out, the concept out, without being able to construct it because he didn't have the technology capable of doing that work. Although he figured out how to do it. So that's interesting. I always thought that was so clever because here you are pounding the key, basically the telegraph key, and realizing that if I could just slice up this audio signal into little slivers and give every sliver of that audio signal a code, send that code to the other end and then reconstruct it code by code. They call that pulse code modulation. And that's how the first very clear digital signals are put across. Still, we do use a form of pulse code modulation in our technology and the internet today. But it's gotten a lot more sophisticated because you're doing it with different algorithms so that you can work with video as well as sound. It's all encoded. Picture elements were all encoded.
Well,
they started that to get the signals across vast distances and a little bit at a time received from Mars or wherever. in the same way, reconstruct the signal or the picture from the appropriate information. And it's interesting that there was a little bit of a hint of that in the Urantia book, where it talks about a shutdown of the open communication circuits. See, now, the celestials do use very real-time communication, encoded. They go through different different routers, you might say. And what had happened was they had noted one at the time of the Lucifer Rebellion, they shut down all the communications. And then there's a packet of information that was still stuck in one of the routers because it was turned off. And later they discovered it there. And just the idea that they had discovered this packet of information concerning a loyal human being on Earth and loyal subjects that were, you know, stuck under the Lucifer Rebellion and holding down the planet on the side of, you might say, Jesus Christ, that was still held up in a packet for a long time until they discovered it there. And the circuits have not been opened up again. But just the idea for me to have, you know, seen that in the Urantia book, they had typified a, you know, type of technology that is, you know, pretty much ubiquitous on Earth. It's used everywhere. The routing schemes today and the way transmission is made up. Back then in the 1930s, you were in the radio broadcast days, and, you know, that's when the technology of distance was really what we were talking about, very low, very bad, primitive in a sense. But they had talked about that, which is interesting to me anyway, because that typifies a technology that was not at all apparent on Earth at the time. Today, that is, yeah, that is exactly what would happen. It would be stored before being transmitted down the line. And those terms like down the line and stuff like that are also concepts that come from the old days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what do the celestials use now for communication?
Well, they still do use those circuits.
Oh, they still use those circuits?
Those circuits. It's just that Urantia is not connected. Because we're still not directly connected with the celestials. Otherwise, they'd be walking around here, you know, on Earth. You know, but they're not supposed to. Not yet, anyway. So their communication systems are not tied into ours as yet. Hmm. But I suspect that it wouldn't take much to make them work with our systems today, because their digital systems probably are very much similar in a sense.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Of course, when it comes down to the other levels of communication, you might say the super spiritual ones, they are, you know, what we have left in terms of being able to communicate. That, you know, that is something like telepathic communication, which has similarities, but are natural, and they're opened up in terms of spiritual circuits. And those are the things that are most important. It also tells you that Lucifer was not operating as a spiritual agent very much. He's using gadgetry, technology.
So Lucifer wasn't using gadgetry technology.
He was.
Oh, he was.
Yeah, it tells you that he was using gadgetry.
Oh, yeah.
If they said they had to turn it off, you know, a type of gadgetry, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a question from Kathleen. She sent in yesterday. She writes, "Hi, Curtis and Michael. Hope you are both well. It is quite an exciting thing that the pace of the information flow is increasing on the podcast. It is such a pleasure for me to contemplate all this new information. Thanks to you both and to the Shaharons for bringing this into my life. I would like to ask the Shaharons, could you speak more on the messages to humanity that the great sign in heaven on September 23rd will be bringing? Could you speak more on the messages to humanity?" Yes. If you can you speak more on what is to take place in the ending of this age and the beginning of the next age? Is the judgment of Lucifer a prerequisite to the beginning of the next age? Is the ending of this age and the beginning of the next age connected to the crossing of the galactic plane? Thank you so much. From my heart to yours, love and joy, Kathleen. Thank you, Kathleen. Love hearing from you. That's great.
Well, what's happened with me concerning that was I received a vision, actually a dream vision, which means that I'm half awake. As I was watching it, we were on a small vessel, you might say, nothing very large. It wasn't a ship. It was a vessel, maybe like my own boat, maybe about 40 feet, you know, fishing boat size. And there's stories about, even in the Bible, where they talk about, you know, being in the rough seas. And if you go through the Yerusha book, you find out that Jesus Christ was fishermen also, and he also made the fishing boats. They were terrified at one point when the sea got rough. Anyway, I was like in this rough, very rough sea, and it was like, wow, man, you know, we're being like, wow, I can't really navigate because it was like the wind was very strong. And, you know, the waves weren't really huge, but the wind was really strong. And there's no way it could go against the wind or sideways. So you had to just say, go with the wind, you know, and just, you know, heave to, basically heave to, which is just let it go. And go downwind, just let the wind blow you. Anyway, what had happened was, I didn't know where the harbor was. And this wind was blowing us so strong, and everybody, you know, was getting worried. And then I received the knowledge that we were headed in the right direction. The actual turn that resulted from that was a series of natural wind that, you know, wow, it was rough, and you know, thinking being tossed all over the place in all kinds of rough ways. And then they said, oh, we're going the right way. We're going the right way. It says, no, we're just going to go. We're going to go shipwreck. No, we're going to go the right way. we are being blown in the right direction. And everybody's like really worried because here you are being, you know, you can't see. It's pretty much a full moon night. It's at night now. And then we keep riding this storm, and then and I keep saying we're headed in the right direction. Let the wind will blow us in the right position. And I can't believe it, you know, because the wind is going to toss us any which way. But we're going, you know, is it this right? And then here we are, it's getting blown. And there's a marker of the harbor entrance. And we just go right past the marker of the harbor entrance. It says, cast a light on it. So the guy's shining a light on it. Yeah, that's the harbor entrance. You know, everybody's soaking wet and the wind's blowing and everything. And we just kind of keep going, and it's still rough. It's really rough in the harbor entrance also. So you really tell, you really couldn't tell that you're in the safe zone, except to know that you passed that marker. It's still rough, the wind's still blowing, and you are now in the harbor. And that's when my dream ended. Yeah. I kind of think that was sort of like an answer to the question before it was asked. Huh. Doesn't that happen a lot with us?
Yeah, it does.
And that's when I heard Ted tell me, Michael, do you ever wonder why we're called the Shaharuns? I said, yeah. Shah means from. Harun is the name of the origin planet. From Harun. Shaharun. Shaharun. Shaharun.
Shaharun.
Shaharun. Shaharun. From Harun. So, in a sense, they were trying to give me the picture, and that's how my mind was able to portray it in a form of a vision concept. And it, in other words, it wasn't really noticeable. You know, it's like, wow, everything's still rough yet, except the marker. Cast a light on the marker, and there it was, the harbor entrance marker. Once you pass that, we're in harbor. That's the safe place. You know, it's not like you're headed to the rocks, you know, and you see the, oh no, that light. No, there was no light. The light is bad. You know, if you see the light, that means, you know, you're headed right into the rocks. I remember the guy saying he had taken a person and called him up and went, rescued him off of a shoal on Molokai, took him off and tied a rope to him, pulled him off the rocks, pulled him off the reef next morning. So why are you on the reef, you know? Why is this? Oh, I saw the white light and I was headed straight for the white light. At night? Yeah. You know, when you see a white light at night, that means danger, stay away. You know, that's like, warning, rocks ahead. So there was no white light. Instead, there was the, you know, casting light upon the harbor entrance, which I marked also. But this was a, like, almost a primitive thing, you know, like a signpost written upon it was the name of the harbor. So it's just kind of cool. So that's a little bit of the idea. What would happen is that you'd probably be still feeling the wind, still feeling the waves kind of move. Yeah, and they eventually get calmer as you enter, you know, the full part of the harbor. But once you pass that point, you're headed toward a much different place. Because if you've ever been in open sea and rough water and you get into a harbor, that entrance has still got a lot of rough to it. And then only when you make the turn into the safe part of the harbor where you have the breakwater, which, you know, shields you from the open sea, do you begin to notice, well, things got a lot better now. Yeah. But so in the initial stages, you won't notice there's a little bit of a hint. You won't notice much. It still feel rough. It still feel but the signal is that once you see that and you're passing through that harbor entrance, things are going to get better. And that may be the hint from the Harun and the Shaharun.
That we're ending this age, you mean?
We're entering into a safer place. You know, it's like the harbor. You're entering into it. And it's depending upon the harbor, you can crash your ship into the dock if you don't know what you're doing. You know, you can crash your boat into other boats in the harbor. You know, a harbor is not necessarily safe. If you don't know how to navigate, even in a harbor, that's the scary part, because you can ram somebody else's boat and then you're in deep, you know, deep
maybe not trouble. Deep water, but deep trouble.
Deep trouble. I got insurance. No, I don't. No, yes. Problems. And that happens a lot of times. People right in the harbor, they go in, they make dock, and then they're tying up, and they do something like, oh, just give it a touch of the throttle. The guy goes, whoo, man, bang. The boat does a funny turn. He didn't know his propellers or his rudder was at a certain angle. And then he smashes into the next boat, next door. And that happened to a boat right down, two slips down from mine. Smashed his glass in and everything. So he had to. Right in the harbor, you know. It was a little rough that night, day, you know, but when they tying up, that's when they make the dumb mistakes. But so, you know, in other words, I'm saying, harbors are good for keeping you from the big rough water and, you know, hurricane or something, but they also can be pretty, you can be stupid and make a mistake too. So that's another thing that can happen.
So we are entering this harbor.
That would mean we'll be seeing that marker, but a dream, it was the same water, same roughness, same wind, whether we were going, you know, whether we were going toward the marker or passing the marker. It didn't seem like anything changed. It's just that the marker marked the harbor entrance. This is a great thing, you know. But doesn't mean we're just let go of the ropes and let go of the rudder, let go of the steering and just heave to and just, we were heave to already. Now we got to start to navigate in the harbor, which is, requires a lot of care too.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have those captains that come out and hop on the ship and take you in through the harbor.
Into the, toward and all the way into the harbor.
Or out.
Yeah. I watched them jump ship, you know, they jump across on the cruise ship, you know, and there's a harbor.
Harbor captain.
Yeah. Pilot, they call him a harbor pilot.
Harbor pilot, yeah, that's the word.
Yeah, and here he is, and boy, it's kind of rough, and the little boat, you know, it's not little. It's about 45, 50 feet. It's moving at good speed and bouncing away. And then you got to come right alongside. And, oh, the pilot jumps over. Yay, everybody cheers. He jumped successfully on deck. He was in a nice leisurely stroll.
So we are at the end of this age.
Yeah, and and I think it was a lot of information was in there. You know, it won't be as noticeable as we think. You know, wow, all of a sudden everything's going to change. No, you just know you just passed that point, which is critical.
And you feel we've passed that point now.
Not really, but we're gonna. You know, we will.
We're about to see the marker.
Yeah, and we won't notice. You see, all of a sudden, is everything, is something going to happen or whatever? Well, to maybe some idiot navigator just ram right into somebody else's boat, you know, but, you know, if you have the lights and you have care and concern, you won't smash into the other guys in the harbor. But that's just a bit of a message, and it's, I think I was wondering what it was all about. Now I know why I received it, because the answer to the question was given before the question was asked. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Saharun.
And when did you have this wake up dream, or when did you wake up from this dream?
I think it was like maybe Saturday or Friday, something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought, that's interesting. I don't know what it means. I kind of know what it means, but what's the significance, you know? Well, it's the answer to one. That was the answer to the question concerning what is all of the signs mean, signposts mean. Means that we are either heading into the harbor or we're passing it, you know, passing the signs and we're moving in, but don't expect the water to suddenly, absolutely become dead calm. You got to get into the harbor to get that done. And maybe this is what maybe everybody would like to learn, but what is it like to get into the harbor? Yeah? Mm-hmm. One of the things that I remember reading about the interviews that were being placed toward Jesus Christ concerning Buddha and what his opinion of Buddha was. Well, Buddha was a good man. He was considered that. But Buddha did one thing that was a little bit sad. He said he would take people right up to the harbor entrance. And that's all. He wouldn't take them in. Was it that he could not take them into the safety of the harbor, or he just wouldn't? To be escorted into the harbor, like you say, may require a pilot, may require only a navigator who's familiar with the harbor, or someone familiar with navigational techniques. Like, shine a light so you can see what's going on. If you don't have a light, then slow down if you can. But we were going into the harbor, heave too, you know, in other words, like, just letting the wind blow us in. But in the case where we're looking at navigating within the harbor, these techniques go for that, which I was outlining. They require a real a true caution. You know, you don't throw caution through the wind just because you've entered into the harbor. In fact, that's when you have to apply greater caution.
You can run into something real. I mean, everything's real close now to run into.
Yeah. Very close. It's a tight area. Mm-hmm. It's just safe harbor for the ships. As you're navigating a safe harbor, the boats in the harbor are safe from the fury of a storm, but not from an idiot navigator that can ram into you. Mm-hmm. You know. So this is where navigation becomes even more critical. And it goes for the spiritual too. It requires a higher level of spirituality. In other words, vision and sight. One of the things that the Holy Bible doesn't teach much of is the concerns that which is concerned about what do you do when you, you know, get to heaven? You know, what is heaven all about? Things like that. It was that missing factor in scripture, in the holy scriptures, which the Urantia book helps to open up that little bit of a chapter, you might say, that chapter on what is next. Because I experienced, you might say, what is next, and the concern of the Dano, the teacher's concern, the high Dano's concern was the seven psychic circles of spiritual attainment, of insight, of divine destiny. These are so important to attain, and attain them all if possible. While you have breath, this is their high commission. Attain them. In other words, take the time out to fall into the worship experience with God, not in the setting of a group, but in the setting between oneself and one's own divine thought adjuster, divine fractal. When so doing, you attain the sharpness of a true navigator in terms of the tight harbor concept. And you won't go ramming into the dock, smashing into another ship, and getting into all kinds of trouble. Because this is where it really counts. And then your brotherhood really is able to steer the true concern. If you are, and you do have the harbor pilot, you know, when it goes to the Panama Canal, the pilots on the Panama Canal, you look at it, all the ships are all taking their turn, lining up to get into the canal. But every one of those ships that are lining up have a pilot in them that have been sent out from the canal, who is familiar with the lineup and familiar so that the grand ships don't make a huge mistake. The smaller boats are called in by radio generally, so they got a lot of room to maneuver. They don't have a giant 300 foot vessel with only 5 feet on each side of the ship to get into that little area. You know, they just got to take their turns. Mm-hmm. Went into a lock in, I forget where it was. Where was I? In the Baltic. What country was I? Finland? Or was it Sweden? The inner lock. There's an inner lake, anyway, and it's separated by one lock.
Oh.
Yeah. The inner lake is a little bit, I think, higher than sea level. So it was in Stockholm. So we went in on there, and all the little guys came in, and they're fill up this lock with a whole bunch of small sailboats and motorboats, all filled in, all kind of like making their way, waiting for the lock to either drain out or fill up. Then all the doors or whatever, the gates open, mm-hmm. and then off you go, one way or the other. But if you got a big ship and that's all the ship fits, the whole lock, takes up the whole lock, you need to know, you need to have some pretty good navigation. And that's why the seven psychic circles are so important to attain. In safe harbor, as you start to move in safe harbor, we'll be clamored together with other vessels in safe harbor, other people. The behavior your understanding of the brotherhood of man, fatherhood of God concept is so embedded within your heart and your soul that your behavior within that zone will be in, you might say, in a trusted and well arranged and mature, I guess you might say, those things are, you know, gained only by experience, or do you gain them artificially? Or one of the things that a harbor pilot does, the harbor pilot is absolutely an expert in local knowledge. I mean, he knows stuff that is not on the charts, that have changed within the time when the chart was printed to the time now. Many have movements that have taken place, dredges that cleared channels that are much clearer for the bigger ships. So there's more room to maneuver in one particular area or another. They have so many local knowledge, so much local knowledge. And that harbor pilot is equivalent to the thought adjuster, to the divine fractal within you. He is your guide in that safe harbor. This is what all of this is about. I am now unfolding the picture. And that's as a navigator, as one that has gone through that. In fact, that's the title they gave me, the navigator. Now, you must become a navigator. And how you must attain that is through attaining the seven psychic circles of divine attainment. The relationship between yourself and the divine harbor pilot, it's not your knowledge, it's his knowledge that you will be given. In fact, you go up to the bridges of the biggest ships that come into these harbors. The harbor pilot actually takes the ship in on his own guidance. He takes control. The Panama Canal is the same way for the big ships. And this is the trust relationship one builds and get closer and closer attainment. But the true way to attain that is once attaining true worship, that you might say wonderful relationship between oneself and God, made attainable. If you want to use the name of Jesus Christ, by all means, use that name. But if you prefer, you know, some other name personal to yourself that addresses the divine fractal in the same essence on a personal level, and it is sure and it is true, then you will have the same guided relationship, because there's so many names. You know, did you know that the name of the sun, there are thousands, or you can say at least 100 of them. I think, you know, I remember they were describing the same creator sun. The Urantia book, of course, teaches the creator sun. His name is Michael. And we have a master Michael now. After Jesus Christ came in on earth and left earth, he became a master Michael. And one that has a title unique to him as a Christ master Michael. And that is attained because of his experience here on planet Earth, Urantia. And because of that, we can have a much clearer relationship to the harbor pilot. You might say official official approval, pre-approval. And some of the things, like, I remember, you ever sit in the exit row of an airplane? There's, a privilege in the exit row because there's a lot of foot room.
The exit row? You mean the emergency exit?
The emergency exit row, yeah.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, you ever sit in those?
Yes, because, they put me in there.
Yeah, they put you in there. Then they ask you, they tell you some things, you know. Are you willing and able to help other people in the case of an emergency? Can you lift 40 pounds can you speak English and, things like that. In a plane that has foreigners, generally they ask you to speak English or speak the language that they ask you to speak, if you're on the airline. And in order to sit there, because there's a certain amount of certain responsibilities come with that that exit row.
Yeah, the leg room.
I want the leg room. I don't care.
I can work the door.
Yeah, work that door. I won't help nobody. I'd jump out first. But that's actually what you're supposed to do.
Yep, open the door and throw it out the window.
Throw it away and jump, and if it's clear, you open it and throw it out and all that. Mm-hmm. And then you jump out and then you help people through, Mm-hmm. But so you gotta get into the right position. But anyway, that's the point, that there's a responsibility for that that positional placement of advantage. And that requires, it's very similar to what is required of us in this change as we enter harbor. And what harbor is a wonderful change of the entire planetary system. The planet itself will be uplifted much closer to a higher brotherhood, because the economy of the planet right now is going to undergo change. It's like, the United States is broke. It's basically running on money doesn't have, just fake money, that is there because that's how the monetary system can be manipulated. But when it really comes down to the way any form of what do you call that type of currency? It's really currency. It's just a matter of it being accepted. And if it is, looked upon as toxic, nobody accepts it. Whoever had toxic money, basically toxic money is worthless. Nobody wants to use it. And we could end up, the world could end up, having to change to have a brotherhood develop where the exchange is something that is acceptable. And now you don't have toxic money, but you have money that is openly accepted, that is exchanged for, the higher brotherhood. That's where the shift will eventually take us. And the planet will see famine disappear, those kinds of, because of the sharing going on. But none of this useless eater stuff where it's useless people, let them starve, use them for experiments, they're nobodies. But in a eyes of God. They bear a soul which has a potential of absolute divine destiny in a high order, which is even above that of the seraphim or the seraphic agents. And that is fantastic, actually. So we're entering this age, rough waves, we're still going through them, heavy wind and being tossed about, but being literally blown into the harbor. And that's what's happening right now, according to the dream and that interpretation that was just given to me to explain, you know. You get the idea?
Oh, yeah. It also sounds like you're calm as the wind blows you into the harbor, but everybody else on board are not calm. They think they're going to be blown into the rocks, and it's okay.
And then they're looking at it. It was interesting, one of the concepts that was coming out, they didn't recognize the marker, so they couldn't calm down. Mm. You know, you see it go by, but what's that? You know, and we have a wonderful marker coming up ahead, and think of it as that harbor entrance marker. This is what the Shaharun is kind of hinting at, giving us one that our own spirit, coupled with the divine thought adjuster, will give us the calmness of assurance that, okay, we're going in. But I'm still getting blown by the wind. I'm still getting wet. And, you know, the boat still looks like it's taking on water. But, you know, you just feel, wow, you know, we made it to the harbor. Now let's go on, you know. Still a lot of work to do.
So this, as Kathleen wrote, the great sign in heaven on September 23rd?
Yeah. This alignment. Is that apparently that's the hint they're, you know, that's the reason I got that dream.
And this vision. Is coming September 23rd or what on about?
It's a signpost.
A signpost.
Yeah, or that harbor entrance marker. Yeah. And it can mean a lot of things to a different ship. You know, if you're in the wrong ship with a bad navigator, yeah, he can just say, you know. Turn about, we're going to the wrong place, you know. And get a runaway from the harbor entrance, you know. Not recognizing it. That's why it's so important to have a navigator that knows the area, you know. You want a harbor pilot that is truly has expert local knowledge. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you can have all the trimmings of, you know, the best schools and navigation and all of that.
And equipment.
Yeah.
And maps.
yeah, not have the local knowledge that tells you.
Knowledge.
Oh, that's the old map, you know, but a ship just went down in that part of the channel. And if you keep going, you're going to ram right into it. And that happened just a year ago, you know. This kind of stuff that can happen. I suspect during the war, there were a lot of people that, you know, who were trying to sink ships in the harbor entrances. And they had a lot of trouble clearing those harbor entrances at one time.
Yeah, there's all kind of ways to slow production down.
Yeah. Hmm. So we're going to one of the greatest ideas of the production of, you know, really highly knowledgeable, you might call them citizens, future citizens of the heavens. Yeah. I being just one of the individuals that were through the school. And again, I emphasize the fact that getting through those seven psychic circles of divine destiny, making that divine embrace, getting that relationship with your thought adjuster clear, and, you know, handing, and basically there's a point, let me explain, there's a scary point that happens very close to the central circle, and it really, you really turn over the helm. You know, we like to feel like we are, you know, the captain of our destiny. Mm-hmm. And, you know, turning over the helm sometimes is a scary thing. If you don't trust who you're turning the helm over to, and this is what you must develop, that divine trust that only comes by, you know, just practicing, and you might call it just being with God. And it happens over and over, and then the divine trust just builds and builds. Turn the helm over, and a guidance will happen. Yeah. But sometimes you may have to rely on those that have, you know, already built such a relationship. There'll be other things that show that.
Well, if it's the first time in the harbor, it's still scary.
Yeah, especially at night.
Especially at night.
Yeah.
I'll say, when you can't see where you're going.
Yeah.
Until you're right on top of it.
Yeah. I came into the harbor, which was familiar to me. Even then, it was to a place that I have never tied up in. But I was at my wits right up to the end. And right at the end, we're just about entering in. I was making a tight maneuver, and the engine died. And I was like 20 feet from the pier, and I was going straight into it. Boy, luckily I was doing the maneuver slow, but I had no power, and then I rammed the dock.
Oh.
Just kissed it.
Uh-huh.
But it still was no fun because that engine died, and you lose power at the last moment of your maneuver, you know.
Out of fuel, or why the engine quit?
It just has a habit of doing that. The old engine had a habit of, after running for hours and hours and hours at one speed, as soon as you pull the throttle back, the governor, which, you know, tells the engine how fast it can run, decides that, you know, he wants to slow down, and he's telling it to slow down, and it pulls all that fuel back from its normal level where it was running, and then it, engine just, that's too slow for me. I think I'll die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, no, you're supposed to just idle. Oh, I'll just die. Yeah, that's what happens. You have an older engine.
And do you have a clutch in there to disengage the prop, the screw?
I got a transmission. It's very much like a automatic transmission.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an Allison transmission that was in the landing craft. That design was, you know, in World War II, they had the landing craft.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the kind of transmission I got in there.
Oh.
Very, very reliable. And same engine, too, that were in the landing craft, except I only got one. The landing craft, I think, had two. Same engines. So they're very reliable engines. But this one's like, oh.
I saw these big, huge ships. I was watching a documentary recently, and I was surprised the prop or the screw or the propeller is hooked directly to the drive shaft and directly to the crankshaft. So as those pistons go up and down, that's rotating. There's no There's no clutch to disengage or engage. I was surprised at that. How could the engine go that slow if it wanted to go slow?
I don't think that happened. It looked like it's direct, but it's not direct.
It was that largest tanker ship that's ever been built in South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of those pistons was hooked to the crank, and that crank was hooked right to the shaft, and the shaft was hooked right to the prop. There was no running the engine without the shaft and without the prop turning. And then how could it go in reverse?
Well, most of the big ships like that are turning a direct hookup to a generator and a diesel generator. So it's diesel electric. The prop is another unit, which is electric motor. And they engage and disengage a direct drive to the propeller. And of course, electric motors can turn one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, like a transmission. That's why. When I say,
yeah, there's no it's no transmission. It's a diesel electric. So, but the biggest ones that they've done so far have been very interesting because they had the engine runs not just this happens to be a warship. It's not just running the engine. I mean the propulsion, but it's running all the computer systems and everything. So the engine never really stops, and it's running all the, you know, the servos for all the rocket ships and armament and everything. So everything is running electrically, you know. So that's the newest designs out there now.
Well, that makes more sense, because just a direct shaft to the engine, didn't make any sense to me. I thought, how can that be?
But yeah, it was a direct connection to the motor, absolutely direct connection to the motor, but that motor turns either way and slows down. You know, you can turn it off, whatever. That's electric, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, they talked about
diesel electric. Yeah, pistons and all that definitely are involved. I think there's such a thing as a absolute direct connection without any, or, you know, conversion of powers to be able to change direction. It it's like suicidal.
getting back to Kathleen's question where she said, a sign in heaven on September 23rd. Where did this date, September 23rd, how did that come into being?
Well, they were looking at the... Well, this has kind of been a exploration of many people who are looking at biblical eschatology. In other words, looking at signs in the Bible. But one of the key signs in the Bible was there would be a sign in heaven. This is from the book of John's Revelation. John and James Zebedee. Well, let me give you a little bit of background about the Zebedees. Jesus Christ went into Galilee, as you know, Joshua ben Joseph was Joseph's son over there. Went over there, got a job working for Zebedee, who was a boat builder. What was his first name? Kind of forgot it. But he had two sons, James and John Zebedee. And Jesus named them the Sons of Thunder. The Sons of Thunder, nicknamed them the Sons of Thunder. It's found both in the Bible and in the Urantia book. And as boat builders, you're running around with big boards and stuff and, you know, and throwing, hauling, and moving things around. And you never hear, you ever hear a long planks get thrown around?
Well, yeah. Boom, boom.
You know, they're just, because they have this low oscillation, you know, long planks, and you drop them to the ground after you saw it, and that's what you start moving around. There's thundering sounds all the time coming out of that boat building shop. And Jesus was a boat builder as a carpenter. And one of his favorite friends was James. I mean, not James, but John. James was, he was murdered or executed. As a Christian. But John was not. He was the only apostle that wasn't. Both James and John were apostles. But John Zebedee lived to 102 years old. But for a few years, about 4 or 5 years, he was on the Isle of Patmos. And the Isle of Patmos, he received a revelation. And this revelation was much like how I received some of the revelation. But his was kind of wide open. In other words, he was pretty much all awake, able to write down what he saw. And he wrote down much of the book of Revelation. It was later kind of doctored up a bit by the writers, you know, and once they doctored it up, they put a curse at the end of it concerning any changes on that, curses on the book of Revelation put upon you. And so some of those things about the book of Revelation were kind of taken with a grain of salt. But one of them that was interesting was this sign in heaven, a woman with the stars on her head and clothed in the sun and the moon at her feet and about to give birth. So this particular sign is coming about in an alignment that hasn't taken place for, I don't know, thousands and tens of thousands of years. I don't know. It hasn't basically never really exactly happened exactly like that at all. But it was described biblically as a sign in heaven. In other words, a sign in heaven means look up and look into the heavens, and where do you see? Stars and things like that, and astrological signs. And that's what they're looking at. And Leo, I think it's Leo on the top, and he had needed extra stars, and those happened to be, I believe, Mars and Venus and Jupiter. Or Jupiter is actually making a backwards path inside of the constellation of the woman, was Virgo, the Virgin, and making this backwards. It's taking 9 months to make that backwards movement in a retrograde orbit. That's how we discovered that the wandering stars were really orbiting, because they have a point where they make a retrograde movement in terms of the viewpoint of Earth, because the way Earth moves around and the way they're in their orbit, it looks like it's going the other direction.
It's like a little loop-de-loop.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it makes that loop-de-loop inside of Virgo. It takes 9 months to do that. And all of this is happening right around at the birth point at September 23rd, 2017. And that is my dream with the harbor marker. It's still being blocked. Earth and humankind is still being blown with the winds and stormy seas, and you won't see peace and safety suddenly, you know, but it's a marker. So that's where it comes from. You can go, I don't have it, I'm not on, let's see. I could look it up. See what comes up. This great sign where Revelation 12, verses 1 and 2. Now a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a garland of 12 stars. You know that term garland, we make lace that we put around people's necks, mm-hmm. you know, and kind of like, hey, you know, aloha, you know. But we also have garlands, which is a little lace put on top of the head.
Oh, yeah.
You know, garland lace. And those are really nice because sometimes they take a lot of work to make those. And they're also called crowns, you know. But we use the term garlands for the ones put on top of the head. Then, you know, being with child, she cried out in labor and in pain to give birth. Okay. So this sign is September 23rd, 2017. The exclamation and all that, people can look it up and why it occurred. But the next one is very interesting because it comes out in terms of there was a dragon about to devour that child as it was born. And this one is another celestial sign and may mean more than goes with the first sign, which is which probably is the reason that they gave me this sign that, yeah, we will pass the harbor entrance marker. There'll still be rough seas ahead. In fact, more caution now needs to be take place as the deeper into the harbor you go. So the dragon one is the next part. They also kind of are meeting some other signs, Hebrew, Jewish calendar signs and stuff like that. So that's where that comes from. You get the idea?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, that's a little bit of it. Anyway, that is very interesting because there's so many people who have taken the time out to put in the details. What I'm giving everyone else is something that comes from, you might say, from those who are commissioned by God, by Christ, to give information. And that comes from those that sent me that vision or dream. I'm not sure exactly who, but could have been by the Shaharuns, who are capable of very powerful imagery. This is one of the ones, one of the things that were, they were the most powerful of all the beings that I met, that were able to place imagery into my mind. They're the ones that could, I could share mind with. So could very well be from them. It's just that they grab from you imageries that you already have in your mind, and then they compose the image with that, working with the palette of you might say, imagery that you have, like an artist works with a palette of colors as he paints the image, puts together, or you might say. So that was the image. And just like they always do, they answer the question before the question is asked. That's a wonderful thing about what they confirmed. How many times have we gone through the questions being answered before they're asked? So in this way, the answer was given to me in terms of a dream vision, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It happens a lot. It happens most of the time. I mean,
but it's kind of wonderful. And that is an important thing, too, is that remember your relationship with your own personal thought adjuster, your own divine fractal, the little bit of God, essentially is God in you, that is now going to have to be your harbor pilot. You got to trust him. Can't be your navigator in this critical time.
Well, that's a beautiful way of answering Kathleen's question.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah.
Wow.
So in a way, it is the Shaharud who, but not, they didn't borrow my voice. They borrowed my imagery, which is more powerful because the 23rd came to John Zebedee in terms of a waking dream, a vision. And it was like he was taking almost, he wasn't sure, but he got all of that information. Some of it is kind of painted in a, according to the Yantra book, that book of Revelation was highly touched up, And it was so much so that perhaps the authors who scribes at the end, said they put a curse on the end of the book of Revelation. Yes, to preserve it, at least this much it will be preserved, because I'm not sure how many changes were added to the original, so. Mm-hmm. But it's in, we know this much. It was John Zebedee who, went to Jesus and kind of like, he was very close. It's John Zebedee who stood next to Jesus when Pilate was kind of like before Pilate, when Jesus was before Pilate. When Jesus was before the Sanhedrin, it was John Zebedee who was standing by his side. It was John Zebedee who was at the time in which Christ was in the upper room, the Last Supper, and at the betrayal that was going to take place, someone would betray him, and he laid his, head on Christ's shoulder and said, "Is it I?" Everybody wondered. They didn't know how it would be. But he was the one that was called the one who was beloved of Christ. Is the youngest one, one of the youngest, or the youngest. So, but he died a natural death at 102. Everybody else was like killed, crucified.
So he died a normal death.
Yeah, wonderful to have the Irancha book fill in the gaps. And then, if I, know anything of trustworthiness, was that Daniel told me that's a book to trust even more than the Holy Bible. In terms of what goes on with them, the celestials. It's very little about the celestials, the order of angels, the order of different responsibilities in heaven, in the Bible. But there's a whole lot more of that in the Irancha book. It's not to say that the Bible is not trustworthy. It's just doesn't describe the celestial organization much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has a lot to do with how God touched humanity through peoples, and a lot of it is recorded because of the Hebrew people, the Jewish people. You know, their struggles, war, the victories, how they were angelic helpers, prophets and visions.
Yeah, that Urantia book.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd like to somehow get the Urantia book out there more. Well, I guess we're doing that now. But
well, yeah. Well, one of the proponents of the Urantia book went on Coast to Coast recently and presented something in terms of the Urantia book. But I wish I could go on there and talk to George Norrie himself. But then I was not necessarily accepted by George Norrie because I didn't have a book. Mm-hmm. They always have a book, you know. I don't know why. Maybe they cut in Coast to Coast on the prophets of the book. Who knows? But they always have a book.
They really always have a book, huh?
Yeah.
And if you'd go on there with George Norrie, you'd describe what, the Urantia book, or what would you like to talk about?
Well, we'll be talking about the one of the greatest revelations to humanity as possible, which includes the Urantia book. But the fact that you need to have better interpretation of what you're looking at in terms of even Cassini. Yeah. Well, we have, what's his name? What was his name? Looking at, what is that?
Richard Hoagland.
Richard Hoagland, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. What is that doing there?
Yeah. I heard Jim Mars died recently.
Oh, really? I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, so.
Oh. Jim Mars died.
Yeah, he had, you know, ways of talking about UFOs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
I met him in Laughlin, Nevada.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
At the meeting.
He wasn't very old, too, you know, so I don't know. Anyway, that's a little bit of information concerning some of these. There are other people that are, you know, working the same project, but from their perspective, and it's important to have it from as many perspectives as possible, you know. But the one I have is like, wow, you know, think about it in comparison to some of the other people out there. It's like the living and alive. How many of us, I can't find anybody that went up there, I mean, except for Enoch. You ever heard of Enoch? The Book of Enoch?
Yes, I have. I don't have it.
Yeah, yeah. But Enoch was schooled in heaven. You know, he went to school. And Riley didn't, he went to experience a time with him. But I guess he wasn't commissioned to go to school. He wasn't, like, invited to go to class. But Enoch was. Enoch is a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
But he is part of the celestial community of advisors, you might say. The 24 elders that are advising the course and destiny of you for Urantia. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's my story.
That's the story today.
Yeah.
Very interesting. All right, Michael. Aloha.
Aloha.